I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Quinn Bardell says the idea for 99 Breakups, part of the Fringe Festival this year, came from watching a couple breaking up at an airport. He wasn't the only one seeing this private, painful moment in such a public place. So was everyone else waiting to board the plane. He and members of the Pig Iron Theater Company created this performance piece, which is being staged at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts on Broad Street. The audience is broken into groups and led to different sections of the museum to watch different breakups. Some are nearly wordless or involve syncopated breathing. One scene features a couple in bed speaking to each other on megaphones. Well, today on Radio Times, how did this all come together and what is it like to perform 99 Breakups? And we have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio, including Quinn Bardell, co-founder, co-artistic director of the Obie Award-winning Pig Iron Theater Company. He's been on the faculty of the Headlong Performance Institute, also has taught courses at Princeton University and at his college, Swarthmore. Quinn Bardell, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us is Dito Van Reigersberg, co-founder of Pig Iron Theater Company, has performed in almost all of Pig Iron's productions. His alter ego, Martha Graham Cracker, is famously the tallest drag queen in the world. Dito, nice to have you with us on Radio
Times.
Had to say that. And rounding out our trio of guests is Jennifer Kidwell. She's an artist currently performing in Pig Iron Theater Company's 99 Breakups. She performed last night in White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, and she's co-founder of Jack in Brooklyn and a member of Pig Iron's Advanced Performance Training Program. And Jennifer Kidwell, nice to have you with us on Radio Times
Good
as well.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And just to clarify, I graduated.
You graduated. Okay, very good. Very good. I saw the performance last Thursday, and I was outside with everyone else waiting to go into the museum, and a fight breaks out. This is how the play begins. And I looked at the street, and there was a cop car and a couple of police officers sitting in the cop car. And I was watching them, watching the piece, watching the audience, and thinking, what a great way to start the play, thinking maybe they would get out of their car to try to break up this breakup. And I don't know what would happen. Quinn, was that intentional or was that a lucky moment?
That was a lucky moment, although we had several of those lucky moments. And it took us a while to alert the authorities of what we were doing. That happens to be on Broad Street, the dividing line between two precincts. And so one precinct knew what was going on, the other didn't. And I think just like I had that experience in the airport, people are interested and attracted to things that are out of the ordinary, extraordinary moments. And I think that moment is disorienting for everybody, not sure exactly what to be looking for. And we always have people on the street who are just wrapped with attention. And obviously that's one of the origin stories of the piece.
And how big was this breakup that you observed in the airport? I mean, was it...
They were trying to keep it quite quiet. And I think that's one of the interesting things is that when you try to keep it private and hold down emotions, you bottle them up and then they just blurt out and come out. And I think once we were hooked into wanting to watch, we were all doing this funny dance of trying to be at the bookstore reading, pretending to read books and secretly looking over. And I think there was something weirdly communal about that. It's wonderful and terrible that we are interested in other people's stories, both the good and the bad. And I just realized, I think, in that moment that the plays that Pig Iron makes want to feel like that, a little bit secret, a little bit, I shouldn't be watching this, a little bit, I'm not sure what's about to happen. And I think in that sense, we really had the empathy and the voyeurism that are maybe ingredients of performance.
Jennifer, you play a number of different characters in 99 Breakups. Mm-hmm. What is it like sort of overall to perform a piece like this?
I would say this is one of the more taxing pieces in a good way. The track that I'm on kind of pulls on a lot of different skill sets, repetition, duration.
Endurance, I guess.
Endurance, yeah. And then a bit of storytelling, like how to ride this fine line of like when we're being watched, what it's like to be watched and what it's like to be aware that I'm being watched when things are changing so dramatically.
Well, I must say, Dito, when I was going from scene to scene, I did feel like a voyeur. I mean, I did feel I had that experience of... So watching something, maybe I should avert my eyes, maybe I shouldn't, maybe I don't exactly always understand what's going on. No. Is that part of the experience?
I think so. I was thinking about that unfortunate thing that happens on the highway where people are like, oh, there was an accident. I have to look at the accident, even though, you know, there's...
You don't want to look.
You don't want to, but there's something about human curiosity, and it's sort of like, what is a breakup but a human car accident?
I also wonder whether, whether when you have an audience that's not sitting in their seats but wandering around a museum, you do break down that wall, but you can get so close. I'm looking at you, Dito. You can get so close to what's going on.
Yeah, and I think that automatically, I mean, there's something so comfortable about sitting in a theater seat, and I think it implicates you and also makes you feel more involved in terms of what's going on and how you are the witness.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, do you feel people really close to you, Jennifer?
Oh, I've had people touch me. and it's this strange thing that I'm not really expecting that level of empathy because I'm sort of understanding, like, this is a theatrical performance. I'm performing, but I think because this is such a common experience, people really feel like they want to, and because it's happening all around them, people really feel like they want to push through and literally reach out and touch.
Is that part of what you were conceiving, Quinn?
I think so. I mean, the museum is naturally a space where people are pretty isolated from each other, and I think we have a certain decorum that we learn to bring into a museum. And Foucault has written about this, about the oppression of the museum as a space where people are taught to behave and not to touch and to observe. And yet, the paintings themselves are filled with emotions, are filled with stories and tension, and in a way now we're just amplifying that by bringing it into a live experience. And I love that people are right up on top of the action, and in that final dance sequence it's really important to see the collectiveness of it, and also to really hear the way that bodies slap one another and kiss, and all of those sounds and tactile experiences. I think we want them to be not seen from far away but seen up close.
Did you have to jump through a lot of hoops to get PAFA to sign on this?
They were really excited about it. I mean, they were really excited to have us come. I think there's always a little, when we're an organization partners with another, especially a museum that has very, very valuable art, there are things that we are told not to do. We can't bring any food into the museum. And I had an idea that somebody at some point is just eating a pint of ice cream, but that's a no-no. You know, they're a little nervous about running, and they do have their own security guards, and we have pretend security guards, and so there's a team of people that are there to make sure that the art is protected. But in general, they were game. We had an idea of a scene with matches that would be lit inside of the freight elevator. The writer that we worked with, a guy named Kirk Lynn, wrote this beautiful, simple piece about somebody lights a match, somebody else blows it out, somebody lights a match, somebody extinguishes it, somebody lights a match, knocks it out of the hand. And we asked them if we could do that, and they said, sure.
Wow.
And then we asked, could we also bring the audience into the freight elevator? And then they said, that won't be possible.
We're sort of on the outside looking
so we have in. To, we have, there's some diplomacy, but I think it was, in general, they were very game to help us realize this vision.
Jennifer, going back, I hope I'm not giving too much away, but I did want to talk about a scene where you're in with two other people, and as we round the corner, you're doing what seems like syncopated breathing. I mean, it's complicated, actually. The more we listen, the more complicated. I mean, just to kind of stay on beat.
Mm-hmm. It took a while.
I was going to say, what was the process to get that right?
Well, the genesis of this scene was this idea that when couples are together, they breathe together. Or when people are together, they breathe together. And when they are apart, they breathe apart. So we started building the scene by trying to establish a pattern that we could all adhere to that was striking and a bit arresting. And then the question was, how do we break that apart? Like, how does that, devolve, deconstruct? Right. And we tried a lot of things. At one point, there was this laughing that happened.
Oh, wow.
Because it's a funny thing. It's an elemental thing, breathing. We all do it. We all do it all the time. But when there's an attention paid and it becomes the stage, there's something that's kind of odd about it, I think. And so it used to make me laugh a lot. And we talked about, like, that's its own kind of breathing. That's its own, like, recognizable rhythm of breathing and what happens when the audience is allowed to do that after listening to this, like, very strict pattern. And then the flip side of laughter, of course, are tears. And so, you know, then that got integrated into the scene. Like, what does it mean when the if the breathing can forecast an anxiety and a shared anxiety between both parties before and then after a dissolution of a relationship?
And Dito, there is a lot of crying in 99 Breakups. Yes. I mean, a lot of tears, boo-hooing, breathing.
Yeah, in a way, I think of the part that Jen is in as kind of like a cubist version of sobbing. That's how I kind of read it to
me. What do you mean by that?
It's a stylized way of portraying a kind of weeping. And it's amazing how much your kinesthetic response as an audience member, especially because you're so close. I mean, I think it would be very different if you were in the theater. But because you're in a room that's, I don't know, like 10 feet by
not
15 feet.
Low ceilings.
You start breathing with them, and then you have that feeling of a little bit of the hysteria or the sobbing or the sadness that comes with that crying, even though they're doing something quite technical.
Is it hard to cry on cue? I don't know. Is it?
Yeah, it is for me.
It is for you, Jennifer?
Yeah, I think it is for a lot of actors. But I think as an audience member, actually, Quinn has you had a note for the cast.
Go ahead.
Well, I guess I'll say two things. One is I love Balinese music, and one of the things about Balinese music is that it's always different rhythms going against each other. So you have a 5 rhythm going against a 6, or a 6 going against a 9. And so you have these moments that are almost euphoric, where those patterns begin to come together. And so this breathing idea was something about that, about something that's just off, and it really it leads to a kind of mental madness, because you want to have resolution, you want to have unison. The crying, we never asked our actors in Pig Iron to cry on cue, and that's a trope of a certain kind of acting school. And we just felt like it's about breath. It's about sometimes the resistance of the emotion that actually allows space for the audience to really feel things. But in this, I had this image of an entrance through what I call a curtain of tears. And so when you enter the space, you're kind of entering all of these tears. And I didn't want it to be a faked gesture. And so we spent some time trying to find not a amplified way of doing that. Outside it's quite amplified, but inside something that is allowed to watch human beings at their maybe saddest, most sorrowful.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about Pig Iron Theater's 99 Breakups, being a feature part of the Philadelphia Fringe Festival, which is underway. It goes until September 21st in venues all over the city. Our guests are Quinn Bardell, co-founder, co-artistic director of Pig Iron Theater Company. Also with us is Dito van Reigersberg, and he's the co-founder as well, has performed in almost all of the productions since 1995. And Jennifer Kidwell is an artist currently performing in 99 Breakups. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Also, open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine's Heart and Vascular Center joins you in supporting WHYY. With over 20 community cardiology practices throughout Pennsylvania and New Jersey, Penn's Heart and Vascular Center is committed to delivering advanced treatment options, personalized care, and convenient access close to home. Learn more about Penn's Heart and Vascular Center at pennheart.org or 800-789-PENN. Penn Medicine's Heart and Vascular Center. Your life is worth Penn Medicine.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. There's a shortage of eels in Japan, and that's been a boon for Maine fishermen.
The glass eel fishery in Maine was valued at over $40 million last year. It was second to American lobster.
But how's that affecting the American eel population? That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia opens its 50th anniversary concert season on September 14th and 15th at the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts. Music director Dirk Brassé conducts the orchestra in beloved works by Verdi and Beethoven and welcomes pianist Dee Wu for Mendelssohn's Piano Concerto No. 2. Tickets available now at chamberorchestra.org or 215-893-1709. That's chamberorchestra.org or 215-893-1709.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Jennifer Kidwell or Kidwell. We've been joking about her name compared to our other two guests' names, also Dido Van Reigersberg and also Quinn Baradell. And we're talking about 99 Breakups and Pig Iron Theater. And again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Jennifer, the scene that we were talking about where you're breathing and then you get fired and you sort of crawl out of this space. And as the audience, we pass by you, and I actually feel guilty because I was tempted to sort of reach down and say, it's going to be okay. But I didn't do that. I just kind of kept going.
No,
which
it's
I think
fine.
Often happens on the street. You're walking around the street, you see something, you want to sort of be a human being, and you do or you don't do it. But I had that experience with you.
A lot of people do that. It's kind of uncanny because I thought that I'm not really looking at people in the face, so I'm not sure who's doing it. And I thought that it was always, oh, I know that person. They're just, you know, trying to let me know that they're there. But I think that it's usually strangers. And they're, you know, using the name that I've given in the scene.
Right.
And it's pretty incredible. I think that maybe I didn't realize how much that the sensation was reverberating in the space, you know, like how much empathy there really was or there really is during the piece.
And who hasn't gotten fired from a job or know someone that has
and wanted to crawl away.
Wanted to crawl away in a corner as you are doing. I'm curious for you, Dido, how much this gets changed every night or how much you're sort of playing with either the storylines or how things move around the museum.
Well, I think in Pig Iron in general, I think we tend not to think of any performance is finished, so we really, even though opening night is technically considered the time where the piece gets frozen, we kind of go against that ethos, and we like to think of it as always growing and changing, and you know, Quinn can speak to this a little bit more, but Quinn made a radical structural change to the show on Tuesday, and you saw it on Thursday.
I did.
So that was pretty risky of him, and I think that's an exciting thing that then the performers who work with Pig Iron, they have to be ready to jump and change and say, like, let's do it this way. Yes, let's try. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think part of the comfort is that you know that this is an experiment. This piece has never been done before. This is a site-specific piece, and those always come with challenges and difficulties. And there was going to be a better way. If there's a better way for the audience to be taken through the piece, you know, after a couple of test audiences, Quinn was like, I think we have to change the structure.
Oh, to move people through.
In a different way.
In a different kind of way.
Yeah.
You want to take that, Quinn?
Sure. I think the audience always in a performance is such a vital element that we really don't think of it as not being in conversation with an audience. And so for us, having those first test audiences was really valuable to learn about what it is to have 120 people moving around this space, experiencing this play in this particular order. And I realized that without a docent, there was no way for people to really know where they were going next, nor how long that was going to take. And so there was a way in which the museum wasn't quite as alive as a space without these docents. And so there was also a scene that didn't quite find its own DNA, let's say. There was a bison. There was our costume designer made a bison costume over a weekend.
Because, of course, Catherine. You have to have a bison when you're talking about breakups, right?
Yeah. It was about who had been shot by more arrows, bison, Native Americans, or cowboys. Turns out we think bisons. So it was a kind of absurdist part of the show, but it was difficult. And we had a bunch of actors, and so I basically threw them this proposal to be in charge of a group of 25 people and to guide them through as a ostensibly a volunteer for PAFA, which then turns into them revealing more and more of their own story. And they also illuminate the art that's around them. And so there's a part of the piece which is focused on performance inside of these rooms, and there's a part of the piece which is less focused on performance and more focused on the resonance between this live experience and the art on the walls.
There's some of these scenes where are nearly wordless. For instance, the one, Jennifer, where you're just essentially breathing, and then we see you getting fired behind this closed door, so we don't actually hear anything. There's another one where a couple, I mean, they look like they're literally sizing each other up. I don't know. They're measuring each other. And then they say, yes. And something about that simple word, I'm looking at you, Dito. It's, I don't know. It just sounded more interesting every time they said it. Yes.
I mean, I think that that piece to me really speaks of, in a relationship, how there's this strange desire for balance and equality and a feeling that we're both equally in, we have equal stake, and we fit together. So there's a lot of, there's literal measuring and then like, oh, we fit together really well. Oh, we're perfect together. Like, oh, look, my head fits in that little nook between your sternum and your chin. It's so great. Yes, we did it.
We like to think of that group as scoring 100 out of 100 on a match. And so they on paper, they are totally perfect in every possible way. They dress exactly the same. They fit in exactly the right way. And so there's this sense of this has to be right. And then, as sometimes happens, there are small things which suffocate the perfectness of it. And perfect doesn't actually mean it will work.
Yeah. Can I quote one of my favorite lyrics by Rufus Wainwright?
Oh, sure.
He says, what does he say? Love is a game. No, no. Life is a game, and true love is a trophy. So he's sort of saying this thing of like, oh, if you can do that, then you've won at the game of life. If you can find that person who makes you go, yes.
where your head fits under their
chin. Where your head fits perfectly under under their chin. And then, I don't know, there's something about watching 99 Breakups where you become aware that all of the people, and you know, there are people of different ages, different backgrounds, everything, but all these people have been broken up with. I mean, like, it's almost like being born or dying. It's like a universal, and I don't know. It's just interesting to look at someone who you wouldn't think. It's sort of why I like Jury Duty, is that sometimes you're like, wow, we all have this experience of living in this city and having strange.
That was a great segue there. I was,
that's how my brain works.
No, that's okay. That's okay. But did you all? Did you have to think about your own breakups, Jennifer? I mean, did you, was that something that helped you think through this piece?
Yeah, I mean, my track is a little different because I had a mine's a firing, but we sat around and everybody, or not everybody, but those of us who wanted to shared breakup stories, and then I recently told the people in my group about the last time I got fired from a job, which...
what was the last time you got fired from a job?
This
can
is
you
great.
Share that with
oh,
us?
Oh, yes, totally. Okay. I was working in this restaurant in Brooklyn, and I go in and go to work, and I should have known what was going to happen because I had borrowed a book from my boss, and she told me to bring it back. So much like in this show, I show up to work, I have all of these bags because I had rehearsal afterwards, and she was like, can I, she held out her hand for a book. I gave her her book and she said to me, she was like, I'm sorry, but you're fired. And then I gave her this look like, what? And then she goes, I mean, come on. And I was like, whoa, okay. That is it. That is the limit.
Wow.
So I, you know, said, well, you know, can I have my money, the money that you owe me? Yes, yes, yes. And so I, you know, dignity, I'm collecting my things, like trying to get my things together because there were people sort of filtering in and out of the restaurant. And the best is I turned to walk out of the door and I was like, I'm not going to slam it. I'm not going to be upset. But I had all of these bags and I was so distraught that my violin hit the door on my way out as if to say like, ugh, I hate this place. And then I was just like, I can't turn around and say, I didn't mean to do that. That's not, I'm not mad at you. And, you know, I just had to, I felt like I was crawling away.
Right, right.
I think one of the things when we told all those stories that we realized is that when you're going through a breakup, romantic or otherwise, it feels like you're the only one in that situation, that nobody understands, that it's so specific to you, and there's in that way nobody else can understand except the person with whom you're leaving. But then as we begin to assess like the universality of the theme, we realize that in fact those feelings are very present in so many of us.
Absolutely. Let me quickly reintroduce the three of you. That's Quinn Baradell, and he's co-founder, co-artistic director of Pig Iron Theater Company. We are talking about 99 Breakups, their performance piece for the Philadelphia Fringe Festival, which is underway. Also with us, Dido Van Reigersberg, co-founder of Pig Iron. He's performed in almost all of the productions since 1995. And again, his alter ego, Martha Graham Cracker. Is that with a hyphen or no?
Hyphen.
Yes. Of course.
Please, Marty.
From one hyphen to another.
Exactly.
Martha Graham Cracker, famously the tallest drag queen in the world. In fact, her monthly cabaret series at L'Etage in Philadelphia has been running for, what, almost a decade?
Yeah, 9 years. We had our ninth birthday.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And also with us, Jennifer Kidwell. She's performing in Pig Iron's 99 Breakups. She performed last night in another Fringe Festival performance, White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, co-founder of Jack in Brooklyn, and she's a graduate of Pig Iron's Advanced Performance Theater Program. Is that right?
Training program.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you want to join our conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. There is a scene that also takes place underneath the Ariadne asleep on the island of Naxos, a very beautiful, very erotic painting as well. And this is a couple that I have to say engaged some very boring sex, if I can say that on the radio. But even more than that, they get into this whole discussion dissecting and disagreeing Snowpiercer. I think I was one of five people that watched that movie this summer, which I loved. So I was just fascinated that Snowpiercer got its way into that dialogue.
Yeah, I wanted to be something that felt like it was happening right now, as opposed to a movie that had been released a long time ago. And it really is the way in which we think we're talking about this movie, but in fact we're not at all talking about this movie. We're talking about all of the ways in which we are in disagreement, all of the small ways and large ways in which we don't see eye to eye about how this world works and how we work together within it. And so I wouldn't say that Snowpiercer is just a kind of a random idea, but it has enough heat that it allows us to get at some other things within that scene.
Yeah.
And of course they're speaking often through megaphones, and so there's this, it's a fairly realistic scene, and there's a lot of pausing and all of the awkwardness that sometimes happens in the middle of, are we fighting, are we not, are we about to have sex, not. But the megaphones adds this one, I think, theatrical touch, which is that sometimes it feels like you're shouting. And please hear me. And the only way that you're going to hear me is if I add this megaphone gesture. And I think that's both funny and also kind of painful and maybe a little bit true.
So where are you, Quinn, when all this is going on?
I am rushing around night by night, watching and listening to the docents, observing the movements of the audience and the actors, and taking notes every night about each scene. We're still, as Dido said, it's a piece that's really in process, and we're trying to learn how this machine works. And so there's lots of notes and small tweaks and changes to the text and things that are unexpected discoveries that we want to build off of.
And is there anything that surprised you about this, Dido?
Surprised me in what way?
And just now that you're seeing it performed and it's in its space at PAFA, is there anything that you didn't expect that has happened?
Maybe more that the space has its own rules, because it's unlike a theater where you come in and you build a set. The set comes with the building. So then there's like little beautiful details that have to do. There's actually a part that someone told me about that I haven't seen, where they refer to a vain woman it's a statue of a woman looking at herself in the mirror, and somehow that gets incorporated into the story. And so things like that are just beautiful because they're so site-specific, and they're they're so delightful because you know that it couldn't happen anywhere but here.
Well, I was wondering about that, whether, you know, this is a show or a performance piece or a play you can take somewhere else. I mean, can you take it out of PAFA and do it can you do it somewhere else?
It would take some work. I think we really tried to build it inside of that space, but the theme is not solely dedicated to PAFA. There's a museum in Croatia called the Museum of Broken Relationships, and it's a museum of artifacts of relationships, the things, the detritus that's left behind. There's a whole case of engagement
rings. Did you
know
that before you wrote this?
I had heard about it, and some friends just went and visited it, and so we're certainly going to contact them and see if they want to have a performance alongside it. And I think, you know, like many pig iron works, it's a large cast. There's 20 people. There's 12 technicians to just keep it on its feet, which is a lot of people for only 120 audience. So nobody's going to make tons of money on it. But I think it's really having an effect on its audience, and people are walking away. I see couples squeezing each other really tightly on the way down the stairs. And
have you seen people fighting?
We sometimes break couples up into different groups, and so I see them kind of high-fiving each other across the way, but maybe they're happy to have a little spare break
from each other.
We were saying this is a dangerous show to invite somebody to. Like, it's not really you have to be in a solid relationship. It's not like a hey. It's not a second date play.
And Jennifer, how do you prepare? I mean, are there certain things you do, because there's something very physical about this, of course.
I stretch.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. I stretch a lot. And I mean, we're not like doing breathing exercises in repetition, but just making sure that the body feels as elastic as possible is the best.
Jen is also part of what we call the grappling section, which is the first section of the finale. And it is a tightly, tightly choreographed, almost wrestling match. and they run through that every night before the show, because the tempo is so precise, and also the movements are just so hard on the body.
Yes, indeed. And even the thought of falling to the ground, I mean, that would hurt, wouldn't it?
Marble.
That's marble. Yeah, floor. Exactly.
Nicely stoned floors, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's really a satisfying part of the show, I think. I think it's surprising. It feels kind of like a revelation when we do it. And the synchronicity is nice, and the weight sharing, the effect gravity can have on the body is nice, but it does take a little preparation.
Yes, and there's something about just running too. I mean, just the feeling of running. Yes,
which is I mean, so the finale was choreographed by Dana Hansen, who's a choreographer from Portland,
Seattle,
and she's a genius. And part of the way I think that finale is a revelation, as Jen said, is that you have all these little intimate scenes that you go through as an audience member. And then for the finale, there's a rotunda once you get to the top of the stairs of PAFA. And so suddenly it goes from being very intimate to being kind of an epic view. Again, this feeling of like, oh my God, there's so many people in the world, and all of them have been broken up with or have broken up with someone else. And there's it's sort of a universal story. So there's a way in which the camera kind of pans away.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about Pig Iron Theater Company's 99 Breakups. It's featured this year in the Philadelphia Fringe Festival, which is taking place through September 21st, I should say, at venues all over the city. And our guests are Jennifer Kidwell, Dito Van Reigersberg, and we're also talking with Quinn Bardell. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Dow Chemical Company supports WHYY. Dow combines the power of science and technology to help address many of the world's most challenging problems. Together, the elements of science and the human element can solve anything. Learn more at Dow.com.
Composer, bandleader, and musician Gerald Wilson died Monday at the age of 96. On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to our 2006 interview with him. Also, A. Scott Berg tells us why President Woodrow Wilson remains a divisive figure even though he left the White House in 1921. Berg's biography of Wilson is out in paperback. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Troubled relationship. sensitive guy playing for the camera.
She had to heal herself before she could even think about healing a relationship. His reaction is to try as hard as possible to forget.
How actor James McAvoy's character got close to the bone in the film The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Lincoln Motor Company, introducing the first ever Lincoln MKC with available active noise control that reduces unwanted cabin noise to help provide a more pleasant driving experience. More at Lincoln.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Again, we are talking about 99 breakups and talking with members of Pig Iron Theater Company, including the co-founder and our co-artistic director, Quinn Bardell. Also with us, Dito Van Reigersberg, also known as Martha Grahamcracker, and Jennifer Kidwell performing in 99 breakups. And she performed last night in White Rabbit, Red Rabbit. Let me ask you, Dito, I haven't asked you about Martha Grahamcracker, but is being in drag any different from acting?
Yes.
How so?
traditional acting is you don't interact with the audience very much at all, except they're sort of permeating your consciousness through a fourth wall. There's a sense that they're there, but you're not really interacting directly. And drag, the way that I do my drag performing is really penetrative. And I use that
word. What does that mean? What are we talking about here?
We're talking about how I'm really going through speaking of Snowpiercer, I'm really going through the fourth wall.
I got you.
And I'm really, someone was saying, who was telling me? Someone was texting during a Martha Grahamcracker. Can you imagine?
No.
They were texting during my last show, and I took the phone away and I held it over a glass of water, and I said, do you know how easily I could ruin your life? So Martha's, very much trying to get a rise out of her audience and sit on handsome men's laps and things like that. So it is quite different than being in a play where you don't get to steal people's phones.
And threaten them over a glass of water.
Yes, yeah.
You're working on a play, or perhaps even a one-man show on Charles Ludlam?
Yes.
I guess a well-known...
Well-known actor and playwright and impresario of the theater from the 70s and 80s in New York. He had a company called the Ridiculous Theater Company. And he created, and actually Jen is in the show as well. So it's a piece that we've titled "I Promised Myself to Live Faster," which sounds
it's a great title,
right? It sounds thank you. I think it sounds a little bit like a pulp novel, it's a piece that. So I did a play of his called "The Mystery of Irma Vep," and then I started reading biographies about him, and I was really interested in his life and his. Particularly in one performance, which is called Camille, that was sort of his signature performance where this is going to sound familiar. He was in drag, but his hairy chest was out. And it began and people would watch the show. And in the first half of the show, they were laughing hysterically. He was very funny. And by the end, Camille, she dies of consumption in sacrifice for her love. And people would be weeping by the end of the show. And I was always struck by that. And then I was also struck by the fact that Charles Ludlam, who was this great theatrical pioneer, died of AIDS. So there was this double image for me of him performing this signature role that moved from very broad comedy to real moving tragedy. And then there, in almost like it predestined him in some way or something. I don't know. That he then he died of a kind of consumption.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jennifer, you did last night White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, and this is a cold reading, right?
Yeah, totally cold.
Is that scary to do? I mean, or just is that a different kind of experience and not know literally what you're going to be reading.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it's definitely, you know, totally stepping into the unknown, like absolutely unknown. Don't know how many people I'm going to encounter when I come out from behind the curtain. Don't know what's in that sealed envelope.
And that's what you're given?
Mm-hmm. A sealed envelope and then a script and just start reading and do what it says. And it's very powerful. It's going to happen a few more times during the festival.
And it's an Iranian writer, right?
Yeah, yes. Nassim Suleymanpour.
And are you sworn to secrecy then?
Yeah, and I wouldn't want, it's not, yeah, you don't want to know before you go, but I would encourage people to check it out. It's a very powerful piece of art.
And are you a good reader? I ask that because I'm not.
I actually narrate audiobooks.
Oh, you do?
So I do that a lot. Read.
Read aloud.
Read aloud for the people into the microphone.
For the people.
Yes, exactly. And is it true that Martha Graham Cracker's first name was, oh God, Polly Vonnegut Cracker?
Well, she had an evil twin sister. Oh my God. Who's been doing your research?
I don't know. Is
How
that right
do you know
or
about
wrong?
That? No, it is true that she had an evil twin sister named Polly Vonnegut Cracker, but then somehow was she killed by Martha? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Pushed down some stairs?
Killed in a swashbuckling accident. I'm Jolly Ship Roger.
Polly Von, I just, you know, I love puns.
Clearly.
But anyway, let's leave that behind us.
Okay, we will. Moving on. So Quinn, what are you working on? Or what? I mean, there must be. You talked about perhaps staging this in Croatia.
Yeah, we'll see about that. So one of the other parts of my life is that I run the Pig Iron School for Advanced Performance Training, and we're about to start our fourth year. And so this was a big switch for the company, where we'd been making original plays for 17 years and touring them, and then we began to realize that, well, first of all, Philadelphia was this wonderful city that had a lot of hybrid energy, people wanting to kind of make things from the ground up, and we were, I think, a big part of that world, and that we also had been teaching in a variety of places, but really as side projects outside of Pig Iron, and what would it mean if we would start our own program and not let it be just a weekend workshop here and there or a two-week thing, but something that it has depth to it and that could really transform young and emerging artists to both form a artistic community among themselves, form companies, make work that may be very different than Pig Iron, but maybe stems from the same sources. And now we're seeing the fruits of it. And Jen is, of course, an inaugural graduate.
Yeah, so you're
graduate.
Part of first graduating class.
All 15 have stayed in Philadelphia. They're all, many of them are in 99 Breakups. Mm-hmm. They have done everything that I've imagine them doing and more, forming companies, touring their work nationally, internationally, collaborating with Pig Iron. It's been quite remarkable couple years.
So what do you look for in actors? Or do you not have are you open to
I think
all
there's
kinds?
A way of, when you're starting a project from scratch, the trendy term is devised theater, that you are looking for people who are really open, who are generous, who are happy to sit in the messiness of a process that doesn't have an end goal that's really clear at the outset, that have theatrical instincts, that are able to improvise and learn in the moment, just like Dito. Like Dito's amazing Martha Graham Cracker performance, it is an extended improvisation, and Dito relies on a whole set of amazing instincts and skills to pull that off. And I think there's a lot of people, myself included, who want to know how he does that. And we had a cabaret last night, and it, in a way, is trying to build not just a Martha Graham Cracker as kind of the sole representative of the cabaret scene, but that there's more people like Jen who are able to seize that live moment and really understand what live theater is, as opposed to something which has that fourth wall and feels kind of impenetrable.
There's a nice piece actually in Philadelphia Magazine about you, Dito, and you do describe in there the first time, I guess it wasn't a theater piece, but where you dressed in drag and went out on the street. And
I did.
And what that felt like for you.
It felt scary. It felt really scary. I think partly because part of my coming out process, I guess, or what you, my coming to terms with who I was as a gay man, was dressing up in drag secretly, furtively, in my mother's closet. my poor mother. and so taking that into a public sphere was a really scary transition. And now, of course, it's like, oh, yeah, that's business as usual. But at the time, it was really terrifying. And I was like, oh, this says something about who I am. And now I'm like, hooray, that says something about who I am. But at the outset, I think I was really like, oh.
Mm. Dito and I were college roommates from freshman year through senior year at Swarthmore. Mm-hmm. And so I got to see all these wonderful prototypes of Martha Graham Cracker before she had a name, but just these kind of dress-up parties where something got unleashed that then became this wonderful cabaret.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. I mean, does Martha feel, she's often described as your alter ego. I mean, does she feel like a part of you, or is she someone you
She does. There's
perform.
If there's a Venn diagram.
Yes,
there's
right.
a lot of overlap. But then there's something about her. My dad says that it's my maternal grandmother coming through.
Oh, how great is that?
Which he finds terrifying. yeah.
That would be his mother-in-law, right?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes. And she was very much a grande dame of... She actually was an actress. And she a little bit like Sunset Boulevard, like she was... She subsisted on martinis and cigarettes, and she would say things like, okay, to my dad, whose name is Fernando, she'd say, Fernando, it's martini time. So, you know, that's nothing I would ever say.
I don't know what that means.
I guess that means like, that might be something Martha would say, but that's really nothing I would say. No, in a way, Martha is like me, as Quinn said, unleashing something that I think is somewhere inside of me, the diva grande dame, but who I couldn't live as 24/7.
And you did study with Martha Graham's dance company. So,
I did.
Yeah, all the pieces fitting together.
I heard a lot of funny stories about that lady.
Yeah. She was, shall we say, not easy?
She was not easy.
To deal with. Work with.
But she was a genius.
Indeed. I'm interested in Jack. This is what, your theater company?
Oh, it's not a theater company. Okay. It's a performance space
in
Brooklyn that is headed by Alec Duffy. And it's a place that hosts all manner of performative acts. I'm going to do a show there in November with another Philly actor, Jess Conda, who's also in 99 Breakups. That will be a drag piece.
Oh, interesting. So you'll be in drag?
Yeah. Yes.
As Stan.
Stanley Epps. and then Chelsea and Magda, two Philly dancers. Jumatatu Poe also. There's a bunch of Philly people who are going to be featured there in this fall, which is really exciting.
That's awesome.
It's nice to have that kind of like partnership, that bridge between Philly and Brooklyn.
But is there something you think unique about Philly? I mean, it's theater scene or the people that seem to gravitate to theater in Philadelphia?
I think that Philly is really doing a lot of daring things. And I think that people are not hesitant about, you know, like bureaucratic matters or like, I can't do this because I don't have funding. I don't have space. I don't have this. The sensibility here is not the focus on what I don't have. It's what do I have and what can I make with that, which is super, super exciting.
Is that because it's affordable or it's just it's more than that?
I think affordability. I think that there's also a sort of like the timbre of the city is DIY and scrappy. And I think that really informs the art making. Plus, the theater community is very, very tight. Very tight. And maybe a little niche-y in that, you know, companies and groups of people are sort of known for doing certain things. I'm also a co-artistic director of Groundswell Theater Company, which will soon be renamed. The soon to be renamed.
We don't like the name.
Groundswell.
No.
Okay. No. I can say that on the radio. I'm going to get so much trouble for this, but I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
The soon to be renamed. But you know, it's an exciting moment for us, and it's actually four Pig Iron graduates and one Headlong graduate coming together to form this thing that it's exciting to think about, you know, well, what's our piece of the Philadelphia pie. And I've certainly benefited from working with these people at Pig Iron, and I'm lucky to have a fellowship through the Fox Foundation to continue to work with them. So it's nice to be able to take what I can and learn what I can from Pig Iron so that it can infuse the soon-to-be renamed Grounds.
We're almost out of time here, Quinn. We can't do justice to the history of Pig Iron Theater Company, but nonetheless, this goes back to your Swarthmore days?
Yeah, Dito and I were freshman year roommates. There was another wonderful fellow named Dan Rothenberg, who's one of the co-founders and co-artistic directors, who came along a year later. And we started at Swarthmore doing a bunch of little experiments in a variety of spaces with $100, $150. And Dito and I, because we were roommates, never wanted to audition for the same thing. So we would come back at night and talk about the different rehearsal processes that we had been in. And Dan, as the director, was casting us in a variety of things, one of which was a retelling of Cyrano de Bergerac for four actors and a string quartet. And it was called Cyrano for Two Quartets.
Oh, wow.
And it was a conversation between musicians and actors and director and writer as a way of trying to capture what is that story about and how do we make it somehow arresting. And people really responded to it. And so a year later, I went to work for a theater company in Minneapolis called Théâtre de la Jeune Lune, wonderful company that's no longer around, but
broke up. There you go.
The company broke up five ways. And but they were stunning, and I said, I want to do that. And I didn't want to do it in Minneapolis, and so I called the folks together, and we all said, let's remount Cyrano. But then we realized, well, if we have time and space, why redo the thing that we had already done? Why not make something new? And so we gave ourselves a name, Pig Iron. We made a epic odyssey for six actors, and we took it to Edinburgh, and that was really how the whole thing started 19 years ago.
Wow. Well, on that note, it's been such a pleasure to have all three of you on Radio Times. Quinn Bardell, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Dito Van Reigersberg, thank you very much
thank
as well.
You,
and Jennifer Kidwell, thanks for
thank
joining
you.
Us as well.
It's my pleasure.
And we've been talking about 99 Breakups, part of the Philadelphia Fringe Festival. There are performances on the 14th, 15th, and 16th. I think I have that right. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about this program. In fact, we posted some photos on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.